Sie hören eine Aufnahme des Kepler Salon Linz vom 27. November 2011 zum Thema Will Location-Based Services Help Redefine Reality? Exploring New Mobilities and Emerging LBS Cultures. Zu Gast ist Mark Kramer. He is an early adopter, participatory observer and informed critic of information and communications technologies and social media services. He is an experienced university lecturer, lecturing at the University of Applied Sciences in Steyr and Hagenberg. Gastgeberin ist Dominika Meindl.
Now we are online.
Okay.
The matinee, we discussed the topic, will location-based services help redefine reality, exploring new mobilities and emerging LBS cultures. My guest is Mark A. Kramer. He hails from the US of A, but lives in Steyr.
No, I actually live in Vienna now.
I see.
I'm teaching in Steyr.
Okay. Before we start, let me invite you again. Go help yourself. We will have bread and butter from the Mauracherhof and the organic dairy of Lembach. And the coffee is sponsored by the Friends of the Kepler Salon. There is also a guest book where you can sign up and get information. And we will listen to you first for half an hour, and then it's up to you. I would like to have a discussion. As soon as you talk, please use the microphone because the whole session will be recorded. Yes. That's nearly all. My name is Dominika Meindl. I'm a writer, poetry slammer, and Lesebühne. I don't know what it's called in English. Reading stage president, whatever. Yeah. More important is my guest, Mark A. Kramer. He calls himself, let me cite, an early adapter, participatory observer and informed critic of information and communications technologies and social media services. He reflects upon the image of our usage of mobile technology and societies, but I think you can tell us more about the topic. I have to admit I had to look up LBS because me and my cell phone, we are not yet intelligent enough to really use the...
First of all, I want to thank everyone for being here. Thanks for the invitation from Iris. Actually, it's interesting, Iris and I, we have sort of a virtual relationship the past 8 years. What's interesting, my life in Austria started here in Linz. I met a beautiful Austrian from the Mofittel, well, from Linz, and we met and married within 6 months. We moved to the States, and then we got pregnant. We decided, where do we want to raise our kids? So we thought we'd come back to Austria. We came here, we raised 2 kids together. We're no longer together, but we have the 2 kids, which keep us, and we're a family in that sense. But I feel somehow connected to Linz. So that's what I wanted to give you some background on that. And also, the times that I've spent here in Linz, I've met many people. I've grown, developed. I became aware of something called Ars Electronica. And then I was curious about, what is this all about? Then I realized that Ars Electronica is more than just about art and design and culture, but actually they were looking at how technology in general was affecting society. And then I came across a gentleman, Professor Prey, and then Dr. Usermaya Rabler. And then somehow I got involved at the University of Salzburg in a new center which was established. It's the ICTNS Center, which Iris is one of the, in some ways, helping found it in many ways. Or you were there in the beginning. You're a pioneer. So my background in, I guess, what gives me some credibility even talking about a subject like location-based services is that I use these services, but I don't necessarily think that the services and technology are the end. I think it's the cultures and how people change, or how people change the technologies, which is interesting. That's what I want to talk about today, are the tools we use when we check in Foursquare. Who's checked in here, by the way? Yeah. Well, I would expect that. Most of you, if you're coming on a Sunday morning at 10:30 to a talk, you're probably interested in these tools. But in many ways, do you think about the consequences of your check-in? Do you think about what are you revealing? What are privacy issues? Will this check-in be the next 1,000 years a part of your life? Because 1,000 years from now, someone's going to look back on this day and say, wow, Martin Kaltenbrunner was here. So here we are. I wanted to explore it. It's a very provocative title. Will location-based services help redefine reality? I think it's each individual will have their own answer. From my perspective, I think it's not just the technology, it's the change in culture. I wanted to give you a little bit of background on myself. I consider myself a nomadic researcher. And I spend a lot of time traveling. Hold on. This is sort of an overview. I spend a lot of time traveling. The past 11 years, I've probably lived more on the Austrian trains than anywhere. And on the trains, you observe how people use technologies in different ways. People tend to want to either telephone, or they're on their laptops working, or they feel somehow productive. And you have not only people commuting, but you have tourists. You have people traveling in general. That form of mobility, train travel, coupled with the fact that now technologies allow us to be connected anywhere at any time, is changing the way we perceive location and mobilities. So this is an overview of who I am. This is if you've been to personas.media.mit, you can take your name and then it searches who you are, how you're perceived on the internet. So this is kind of like, if I was to check in on the internet, everything about me, this is how it would be visualized. That's why I show it that way. And as I'm traveling, I like to observe. I do take a lot of pictures, but I'm conscious of my observations and not to invade people's privacy. But I observe a lot, and I'm observing the past 11 years. There is a change in the way people interact. There's a change in the way that people access information. There's a change in the way people interact within places and location. And this is where location-based services, traditionally, when you define that, it's any service which uses sort of a mobile device. It doesn't necessarily need to connect to the internet, but you need to have some sort of data source. And basically you're coupling data within your location. So it could be something as simple as weather. So how many of you use a simple app to find out the weather around you? Exactly. This is probably one of the earliest forms of location-based services. But nowadays, you really don't even have to check. It's kind of like a part of your life. If you use iPhone, it's simply right there in front of you. You don't necessarily have to do anything. And then the weather and its update changes based on my location. I don't have to search. I don't have to say that I'm in Vienna. I don't have to say that I'm in Steyr or in Linz. It automatically updates based on where this device is. And so location-based services have a lot to do with geolocation. And now that many phones and mobile devices, such as tablets, have compasses, we're able to actually be a little more accurate, so we can look at directions. Or we can even embed within things a way to communicate. So this is how things are changing. So I do a lot of observations. I look at how people are doing things currently, existing practices. How many of you still use a paper map? Yeah.
Although I cannot handle it.
Yeah, but there's something, there is still something special about paper maps. But in some ways, a map, when I think, I was reflecting on how to approach this talk, and one can rely on slides and talk, but I was thinking, what were some of the original location-based services that we, that are around us? Actually, I took some pictures. Last night when I arrived, existing habits, maps. People use maps still. For me, that's a location-based service that's in a paper form. It gives you information. You have to kind of know where you are, the direction, but it's still information around you. But there are new emerging practices, and but from the past, there's a picture here of a tower. You know these clock towers with the clock? How many of you in the past used to carry a watch with you? I think 500 years ago, or 600 years ago, Johannes Kepler didn't have a watch. He didn't have a swatch or an iPhone. So when he was walking around here in Linz, he looked up the clock tower and it told him the time. So for him, that was not only just a point of reference where he was. And from what I understand, most churches were built in a way you knew which direction north was based on how you saw the clock tower. So for me, these were some of the original location-based services around us, were clocks, clock towers, steeples, things like this. But yet, what if I'm a Muslim traveling to Linz and I have to pray 5 times a day? So how do I know, how do I keep track? So then watches became important culturally because people needed to find a way to tell time, and also know, they carried compasses to know which direction Mecca was. But if you think about these cultures of the past are actually coming back in a digital form currently. So one provocative statement is that we can see that technology allows us to do new and interesting things, but in many ways I think we had the culture and need in the past has always existed, but now we're creating tools or services to adapt to cultures that already exist. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I say so.
Well, anyway. So you had this is a traditional location-based service for me. It's a clock. But now we have. Since I've been in Linz, you have this Linz AG, you have this, you can tell when the next, where do I have it? You can tell when the next bus or tram is coming. This is why you shouldn't rely on slides and these transitions. I have a picture here of the Linz AG. Never mind. It is, okay. Let's go here. So, when I arrived last night, I went to the Christkindlmarkt. And most people probably don't use location-based service at the Christkindlmarkt. They don't necessarily want to know, let everyone know where they are or how much they've been drinking. Or but I was walking around observing what people were doing. People were socializing. They weren't necessarily dependent on technology. Maybe they were using their phones to coordinate, to tell someone where they were, and to make an arrangement. It's kind of like real-time connecting people, things like this. But calling that a new particular location-based service wouldn't say that. But what's interesting is that each Christkindlmarkt, people, it has a location. People know where it is, and people intuitively know where the best punch is. Have you noticed that? Or it's somehow word of mouth, or people communicate with each other. So you have to go beyond the technology. It's just a method in which to deliver information, but people are going to find ways to get this information out somehow. Now, one emerging form of location-based services augmented reality. How many of you are familiar with this term, augmented reality? Augmented reality, first of all, we have to ask ourselves, what is reality? We all perceive reality differently. We have the physical world around us, but yet there's a lot of things going on in our virtual world, or what we call social spaces. So Thomas is actually a friend of mine, but he's actually also a student, and we communicate a lot online. I communicate a lot with Martin, mostly over social networks, but we meet quite often in Linz or in Vienna. But we have a connection that may not be physical on a daily basis, but yet we have a connection through networks. So we have to think our reality is not just shaped by the physical world around us, but yet the fact that we're able to communicate, whether it's through video, audio, text, with others, pretty much from anywhere to anywhere at any time. And so when we think of reality, that for me, this is where things are changing. And augmented reality is basically taking data or information from networks or data from what we call the internet and then placing that within a physical context. I was writing on the ETA at the back and it's kind of a little, it messes with your mind because you're going backwards. So that's why I'm saying, what is reality? Augmented reality. So augmented reality is a fairly new concept in which we're trying to use technology to blend the virtual world, so information from the internet, within the physical world. And location-based services are a part of that. So how do we perceive reality too? Last night, of course, whenever I'm in Linz, I had to go deliver case paper. It's right here, my next door. And I also wanted to see how close it was to the Kepler Salon. And going into liver case paper, you have an incredible selection of liver case. But yet, you don't know the question where the liver case comes from. Or what are the ingredients, all this.
Oh, better not.
No, but, or how it's made.
Who wants to know?
But I could check in to Labor Case Pepe. But let's say the owners of Labor Case Pepe are visionary and they're future thinking. And they harness technology to show the world the finest ingredients where it came from. So I could, in theory, I could scan the Labor Case. And then with technology, it would show me that the meal, the flour for this came from the Mühlviertel, exactly where in the Mühlviertel, and that this is pizza liver case. So where did the vegetables come from? Where did the cutlery and all this? We have the ability now to literally connect physical objects, whether it be food, and find out its origins. I think even Hofer is in Satlet. They have this program called Zurück zu Ursprung, where you're able to scan food products and at least find out where it came, when it was made, where it's from originally. Of course, that's one step towards it. But we can actually go further. We could actually maybe connect to the farmer directly, call them up, email them, see how they're doing, maybe send them a gift thanking them. Or we could watch a video somehow of how they made these products. So I share these things. How do we perceive reality? Because we can accept how things are now, or we can look beyond and say, labor case paper for me is more than just labor case. It's an experience. And now technology can actually change this experience. So now, you're smiling, but it'll happen. So these are just some key words. When we talk about location-based services, I think there's a few important words to keep in mind. Context. So it's not just a being at a place, but there's a lot of contextual information. The time that I'm at a place. For instance, here we are at Kepler Salon. It's almost 11 now. It's quite early in the morning on a Sunday. You are all brave people. to be here such early in the morning. So the context, the fact that you're here tells me that you're dedicated. You are people who are probably going to change the world one day. And there's still people sleeping. Or maybe they had too much Glühwein. But context. Location-based services are mostly used probably in tourism currently. How many of you use your mobile phone for information when you're traveling? And if you don't, is it because maybe you don't want to use the internet because of roaming or because of costs? Those are limitations. But I think if cost wasn't an issue, most of us here would probably find it useful to use your mobile for information. These are just some services which exist. There are hundreds of services. I just chose a couple here. And then I have a couple of videos. I wanted to highlight some scenarios and a couple of services which I think are unique. There's an interesting website called Check-in Mania. This fad, I call it a fad, of check-in. Because the fact that you check into a place should not necessarily be something you need to do. It should be something automatic if you choose that. But this check-in mania, you have Foursquare, Gowalla, Brightkite. You have Google Latitude. You have Facebook Places. There's many others. And most of the time, we use these services for finding out information around us. Who's checked in? What services are around us? If I'm looking for a particular food, I can check into a restaurant and find out what food, or let's say I'm looking for a specific dish, the best schnitzel. Where's the best schnitzel in Linz? But there's a... Yeah, but these several places, how... If I didn't know anyone in Linz, and I didn't know... There are services such as food spotting. How many of you are familiar with food spotting? Yeah. So basically, instead of looking for a restaurant, you're actually looking for a particular food, and you can find that. So location-based services are not just about places. It can actually be about objects. I want to find a comfortable place to work. There's a service called WorkSnug. If you're looking for a place where there's electricity, internet, and a couch, you can download the app and find it. So we're moving away from just specific locations, but actually experiences, food or places. Foursquare. Pretty much everyone here may use Foursquare. I think the reason Foursquare is so popular or used is this playful attitude towards check-ins, where they make it sort of a game, where if you check in the most, you become the Bürgermeister. Or if you check in, there's certain advantages. Otherwise, what is the motivation or impulse for me to use these location-based services? Is it simply just information seeking, or am I part of something greater, unlocking my city? Gowalla. How many of you have heard of Gowalla? Yeah. Actually, Gowalla is interesting. They're actually reshaping the way you look at check-ins. They're looking more at lifestyles. So if you're a vegetarian, or if you want just food from the Mufetl, so they have this ability for you to sort of find what's around you based on your lifestyle or interests. Google Attitude. Actually, Google Latitude, I think, is now incorporated into Google Plus. So it's not really by itself anymore. But there's a video here, Google Places, which kind of captures the business model. Because we realize location-based services, from a business perspective, has to have some sort of incentive for companies to use. And this particular video kind of highlights why a business would want to use location-based services.
Say you own a business. You've noticed the challenges of attracting new customers in a competitive market. So you do your research and learn that internet search is a great tool for everyone, not just big businesses. More people use online search engines like Google than any other media to find local information. You want to take control of your listings on Google and let customers know what you're all about. So you sign up for Google's free Google Places. In just a few minutes, you can customize how your business is listed on Google and Google Maps. You can include things like your menu options, photos of your entrees, your restaurant hours, and anything else that helps you stand out above your competition down the street. You can even add coupons that your customers can print out and use when they visit. And now you can see information about your business that you've never been able to see before. Things like who's searching for you on Google, how they're finding you, and where they're coming from when they walk in the door. This information can help you make smart decisions that'll bring you more customers. For example, you may start to see trends in the foods your customers are craving based on what they're searching for to find you. You can enhance your menu to cater to these trends. You might notice that a lot of people are coming to you from the other side of town. Maybe you could open up a sister restaurant over there. You can continually adjust your business listings on Google to improve your results based on the information you see in your dashboard. We're bringing the power of Google to you and your business. It's worth checking out. Visit google.com/places.
Again, I highlight this not to promote Google, but to show you.
Do you interact with your clients on the go? Okay. With service areas on Google Maps, now you can describe where you're willing to travel to do business. You can define your service area by region using zip codes, cities, or counties. Or you can let us know how far you're willing to drive from your location. Do you run your business from a private location like your home or library? No problem. Once you define a service area, you can hide your business address. To add service areas to your business listing today, visit www.google.com/places.
And there's a little clip here showing Google Goggles, which is now incorporated into Google Search currently. So the point that I'm highlighting this is to show a clear case study of how business sees an incentive of location-based services to not only collect data, because every time, wherever you use your phone, how you use your phone, you're leaving digital traces. So when I check into a place, or the amount of time I stay in a place, or people who are around me, all of this information is collected, whether we're aware of it or not. And Google says they want to optimize. We talk about search engine optimization for websites, web pages, but actually what we're doing now is we're optimizing physical locations through these services. So then there's a lot of side effects of this. Imagine if I had to think in Linz, probably the most attractive place to have a business would be here at the Hauptplatz or on the Landstrasse. But yet there are probably a lot of businesses just outside the Landstrasse or the Hauptplatz. You don't have to pay as much rent, but people are not necessarily aware of this. So now location-based services are kind of equalizing this. You don't necessarily have to have the best location anymore physically, but as long as people know how to find you or get what they need. So in some ways, these tools are making it more equal for small individuals, small businesses, to compete with large businesses. So that's one of the things that I find fascinating. And that's what I think Google is, their target group is small, not to say medium-sized, but small family-run businesses or individuals who want to also harness these tools to be known. At the end, there was Google Goggles. This was back to this concept of augmented reality. Google Goggles is an interesting product solution because it's more than just looking through the camera of your phone and seeing what's around you and knowing what that building is or the history about it. But they also have this ability to scan an object, take a picture of it, it scans it and it tells you what it is or tells you contextual information about it. So in theory, if I took a picture of this room and this room had been taken, other people had taken pictures of this room before and had somehow connected Kepler Salon with the picture, then it would recognize where I was. Or like you can take pictures of artwork. Or it can take, in theory, pictures of people, and it would tell you who it is. So
does it work now? Because I've only heard about it in theory, as you said before.
It's now integrated in what's called Google Search. And I've used it in different contexts. It's basically on whether you use Android, doesn't matter. But Google Search is all of these tools together now in one. So if I take a picture, well, in theory, it would recognize that that's the San Francisco Bridge. But, I don't know, I'll take a picture of myself. And then it scans. But it's so light. And then it searches on the internet in real time. But it would work with this, for instance, this logo, Gashneina, as an example. Sort of a demo. The value of this, what is the value of this, you would ask? Let's look at location-based service from a broader perspective. Let's say I'm Chinese, I don't necessarily read phonetic alphabet very well. So there are tools and services that I can use to, let's say, help translate this for me. But if I'm looking for, let's say, I need medical assistance, I need to find someone around me who speaks Chinese, there is this ability to use location-based services to connect people with their needs very quickly. For instance, how many of you have first aid skills or know how to do cardiopulmonary? One person here? Two? Three? Now what if someone was having a heart attack around here and you were the only three that could help them? There is a software application which, for me, it makes no sense. If you're having a heart attack, you're not going to pull out your phone and say, who can help me?
I take a picture. Who is it?
But we could create a system that's sophisticated enough where you're automatically alerted, whether it's a vibration or phone call or somehow, when someone has a heart attack, but it's like an automatic process. And then you sense the coordinates where the person is. But not just the coordinates, you sense the navigation directions, how to get there, the quickest route. Or they could just call the ambulance straight away. But it's all based on context. Maybe if you were in the Alps and you're climbing, it would make sense to check in and let people know where you are so that in case there is a storm comes in, people know that you're at least in that area. So look beyond the current location-based services, but look at how these services can be used to help us in health and medicine and in sports. Now, Nokia, we don't necessarily talk about Nokia much recently in general, but actually Nokia is quite a pioneer when it comes to mobile and also mobile location-based services. And this next video I want to show you is an example of not necessarily using high-tech smartphones, but using simple SMS texts coupled with the ability to scan an item. And this is a short video. So this woman, she received a text message from her lover. Do you want to go on vacation to paradise? And of course, like most women, they want to go shopping first. She needs to get some new sunglasses. So she looks through the magazine. What's interesting is the magazine itself is physical paper, but yet they're taking a physical product and connecting it through the mobile phone. So she finds out prices, location. This is not necessarily a sophisticated solution. nothing. For me, this is just a simple way to demonstrate. It's not going to say high technology or a very sophisticated solution, but yet using simply the camera on a phone coupled with SMS can also get a lot of information around you. You don't necessarily need to have high-speed internet.
But do you mind if we blend in your questions or
no, please,
so we could mix it up with your...
There's just one other video which sort of gives you a comprehensive view of how location-based services are coming together, and that's where I was going to end it.
Oh, you don't have to end.
No, in that sense. But are there any thoughts or questions right now? See, for me, again, it's not about the technology, but how these technologies influence our culture. Or how our culture influences the technology itself. I know Thomas has some questions.
We try. Maybe it works out that we just leave the microphone here, and you can just speak up without using the microphone. Will it work?
Let's try.
Or otherwise, just take the microphone and go ask your questions. But I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
No, you didn't. Not at all. So should I show this one last? This is a concept. How many of you are familiar with Fjord? This is not open to the public. This was shown 2 years ago at the Mobile World Congress. And colleagues of mine, you're familiar with Fjord? Yeah. They're quite an innovative design company. They're in Helsinki, Madrid, London, Berlin, and they do a lot of work with Nokia, and they developed an augmented reality concept, which is actually a combination of, say, location-based services. And the reason I want to show you this, because this kind of captures the sinful or the sensible use of location-based services coupled with augmented reality, all in one. And then after this, then we can have some discussion. So this is a sort of a scenario. A woman named Anna, she's traveling to Berlin. And she arrives, she checks into her hotel. But, of course, like many women, you want to go shopping. Men do. So she's... She's in Berlin. I guess this is der Hauptplatz. And she's using her phone to scan the area around her. And she's able to see... the names of the buildings and the descriptions of the landmarks. And of course, when she comes up, she can see the weather. But yet she wants to see what has happened in that area today. And someone obviously lost a dog. Someone else, there's at 3 o'clock, there's going to be a tour. Someone has a bike stolen there. So the point is that you're using media to embed what's happening in that place. But you can also use media to see the history of the places around you. So she's scrolling back to what Berlin looked like in 1945 there. Again, this scenario is... this can be done today. This is nothing new. So now she wants to see what her friends are doing. So then the social component, using location-based services to connect with your friends or family. So she's able to see where her friends are in relation to herself on the map. Possibly communicate with them. Find out what they've done. Connect to their social networks or see what social media they've used today or what they've written. Photographs, that have been taken in that area. So location and media coming together, embedding media within a particular location. But of course, she wants to go shopping. So she goes to the shopping mall. She's looking for some sneakers. So she types in sneakers. And then using the phone, she's able to see where within the shopping mall are shoe stores. And then she can get an overview of prices. But she wants to compare prices. She wants to get the best price for a particular shoe. So she can scan the shoe, check the prices of the different stores in the area, and probably either purchase them or go to the store itself to try them on. But yet she fell in love with Berlin. She wants to move there, so she's looking for a place to live. So she can use a location-based service to find an apartment around her. But now she has to get back to her hotel. She has an appointment. So then using the phone itself, based on your current location, to help you navigate back to your hotel. So navigation is another key location-based service there. Directions. How many of you use your mobile phones for navigation? Probably most of us now. It's kind of this convergence. You can have a Navi device, or you can have a phone and a Navi device, or you could just have a phone.
Woody, you do it.
So, which just, this reminds me, there was this...
South Korea.
This is a very, very short clip. When we talk about shopping, when we talk about location, how many of you have been to South Korea? South Korea, you notice that it's a very busy, bustling culture. People don't necessarily have time to go shopping for food. So this is a really short clip showing...
South Korea is a unique market.
Have you seen this?
Tesco has been evolving itself, adjusting to the local market. It even changed the name itself from Tesco to Home Plus.
I highlight this to show you location-based services becoming part of an environment.
One obstacle, a fewer number of stores compared to the number one company, E-Mart. Mission: could we become number one without increasing the number of stores? We made an in-depth study into Koreans once more. Koreans are the second most hardworking people in the world. For them, grocery shopping once a week is a dreaded task. So we decided to approach these busy and tired people. Idea: let the store come to the people. We created virtual stores, hoping to blend into people's everyday lives. Our first try was subway stations. Although virtual, the displays were exactly the same as actual stores, from the display to the merchandise. Only one thing was different. You use smartphones to shop. Scan the QR code with your phone, and the product automatically lands in your online cart. When the online purchase is done, it will be delivered to your door right after you get home. People can relax more after work and on weekends. Result: people can shop at Tesco Home Plus wherever they go without having to visit the actual store. Moreover, we could change their waiting time to shopping time. After this campaign, online sales increased tremendously. Through this campaign, 10,287 consumers visited the online Home Plus mall using smartphones. The number of new registered members rose by 76%, and online sales increased 130%. Currently, Home Plus has become number one in the online market and is a very close second offline.
For me, this is an example of augmented reality, because you're actually taking the store and placing it anywhere. So it's going a step beyond. So that's the reason I highlight this, is showing how it's really not that sophisticated technology. Basically, images of products and these quick response QR codes, which are data matrices which connect to or link to something, and then creating a shopping list, sending that. Somehow they're able to pay online, or whether it's an account they have, and it's automatically delivered to their home. This could be done here next week. Easily.
They don't work hard enough.
No.
Yet.
But that's the point. Are people ready to use these services? Or do we have our unique way of using these services? Is there a Linzer way of using these services compared to a Viennese way?
Because our computer surprises in Korea. Mm-hmm. The way they use it handy as well. I've been there 5 years ago. And mm-hmm. they were so sophisticated with the application and using
yeah.
getting over there. People in the streets, like normal people, average people, were using the mobile phones. And never saw the way you use it.
Well, it's a different kind of attitude you have, because I'm not very proud of my dumbness concerning cell phones, mm-hmm. but I know so many people who are even worse. My parents don't know how to text.
Mm-hmm.
They both have a cell phone. Like, oh, can you show this again? Oh, I did 17 times ago. You know, so there's no culture of using the devices.
You mentioned the word attitude, culture, and then you alluded to this, or you referenced to people not knowing how to do something. Is it possible that the technology is not designed adequately enough for people? So why do your parents have to text? Why can't they just, like, speak? And then it's already into a text form and then sent.
And they cannot admit that it's all too small.
Yeah. So the question is, how do we design technologies for different types of people? How do we interface? How do we... This is what's interesting.
Are there any questions?
Yeah.
Because it's not necessary that everybody has to use this technology. Shouldn't there be enough room for people who don't want to use such sophisticated technology?
I share your opinion. I think in many ways we are coming to a point where most of us cannot live our lives in this culture, in this Western, without some sort of connectivity. Either we miss opportunities or we're disconnected in that sense. It's not that you can't live, but if I'm working, let's say, as a freelancer, I probably won't get very much work if I don't have some way for people to contact me. And it takes more time for me if I just say I don't use trains or other forms of mobility to get to places. If I have to walk everywhere and handwrite letters and post it, it takes much longer to get things done. So when you go back to these technologies, location-based services, why are we using these services? Is it to make life easier? To make life more efficient? Does it increase the speed in which we do things? Do I really need to know who's checked in here? Or is there other social...
That's the question I really want to ask you is, why are we using Foursquare, for example?
Yeah. Well, Mark Kramer, I use it for different reasons. From an academic research perspective, I find it interesting. But also, I'm the mayor of Nashmak. I've got power. It's cool. It's cool to be. I've been to London many times. I go to London often. And I was actually the mayor of 10 Downing Street. Because this is before people used Foursquare. You could check into places, and no one checked in. So I was the mayor of Downing Street, number 10. Does that mean anything? No. But it's from a social standing, it looks cool within your friends. Like, that's the mayor of Nashmark.
Actually, have you ever tried to stop checking?
Yes.
In?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a really great experience when you're a heavy user and then suddenly you just stop.
Yeah.
Every checking and everything and all your friends. Where are you? What are you doing?
Yeah. Because you have to think, this checking culture, we do it for different reasons. If I'm traveling, to places my friends haven't been, then it's almost like my credibility or clout increases. So, like, wow, Mark's been to the Louvre in Paris. Cool. But if you're the mayor, or you've been there many times, then your standing increases even more. Or let's say you go to a restaurant and you really take the time to write good reviews, and you really recommend things to people. You're bringing value to that restaurant or to that venue. So one incentive, maybe the restaurant gives me a free meal as long as I'm active, or I get a discount. Austria and most of the world don't use Foursquare the way it's designed to be used, which is actually to increase engagement. It's not just to check in, but actually, how do you help a restaurant like Liebercase? I could give them suggestions. Maybe don't put too much pepper in the pizza Liebercase. Or take a picture and recommend this to friends, increase patronage to the store.
Oh, give vegetarian Liebercase a go.
Is there such a difference?
There is vegetarian Liebercase already.
Soy? Is it like
it
tofu?
Exists, yes. Let's not talk about it. It's a sad thing.
Yeah.
But they should do some research on this, and maybe if people suggest.
Yeah. But to answer your question, I use it also to like feel cool. I've been to places. I've been to Barcelona before. I checked into a cafe. We used to live in Spain. I checked into a cafe and then I looked who else was there, and then I saw a name and a face, and then I clicked on the face and then I looked around and I saw the person. And I personally went up to the person to say hello, and they were like shocked. But yet I said, "Oh, you checked in. You're letting people know you're here." So, but we became friends. So you can actually use these tools to for diplomatic purposes, to become ambassadors of the world, to maybe meet someone. I'm single currently, and I've done, from a research perspective, I've used social
diplomatic
location-based social networking tools to see how it works. I've met people I had never met before. I've met through location-based social networks.
What would be the point to bring somebody to Foursquare?
It's not about bringing people to a particular solution or service. The question is, because you have many different services. I think the future, it's not going to matter so much if you use Gowalla, Foursquare, Facebook, or whatever. But I think the future is going to become more like a browser, in a sense, like a place has different ways for people to connect to it, and then I can view whoever's checked in from Facebook or whoever's checked in from Gowalla or Foursquare. So it's, maybe these services become redundant, and the fact that I use a mobile phone connected to a service provider, maybe the service provider has a location-based service for me to check in. I use three. They used to have Friend Finder, which they have, yeah. But that became like a privacy issue.
Yeah, that's really because you can check where your friend is every time.
Yeah.
You don't have to check in.
And this is where husbands and wives, like your wife check, where is Mark? Is he really at the Kepler Salon?
Hmm. That's the story of the first week.
Yeah.
The husband found out that his wife is cheating on.
Yeah. But see, but these are side effects of these tools. And then people don't want to use them, I guess.
Are these check-ins truly automatic? So you don't have to do anything?
Not anymore.
Yeah.
You may be familiar with an old service called Jaiku, J-A-I-K-U. This was created in 2006. Jaiku was before Twitter and before Foursquare. Dodgeball was the service just before Foursquare, created by the same developers. Dodgeball was an experiment created at New York University. I think it was their media lab, also Interface Cultures. They created a solution where you check into places in New York and you can see who's around you and chat. This is the predecessor to Foursquare. But Jaiku had this ability, it would automatically check you in. But it only worked on Nokia.
Yeah, but that's because yeah.
Yeah.
These things are stored somewhere.
Exactly.
You don't know how long they are stored.
Yeah.
And not this information in
the
future.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's
probably, it's actually a history about you.
Yeah, exactly.
It's more than that. Actually, if you work at Foursquare, you can own a business. Like if you have a restaurant or something, you can reflect, you can claim it that you are the owner. And you can get a really lot of information about the people who are checking in. Not just that he's checked in, or he or she's checked in how many times, but about his age, about the interest, about where else he or she checked in, social status, everything.
Yeah. The HomePlus, they have the address. Factors that keep people from using these services. I think one of the first is that we have this pressure. We always have to have the latest, greatest, most advanced tools. That's one pressure, and people don't want this. That's why when I highlight the Nokia solution, this is from a phone that's from 10 years ago. You don't necessarily need something high tech. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. There's, I guess one way to answer your question is to, you contrast it with other cultures. Look, Africa. For me, location-based services are essential in Africa because the infrastructure, the physical infrastructure, is either highly, highly developed or not developed enough. There's these extremes in Africa, as everywhere. Maybe, in Austria, the extremes are not as great, but there are places in this world where my mother's from Brazil. And I think it was only like 20 years ago, the village she's from that actually had paved roads. They had internet before paved roads. It's kind of strange. So when you have internet before paved roads, it's the same in Africa in the sense that you have the infrastructure there to leapfrog and use services which are not necessarily there physically, but yet we know the need is. You can probably use these tools to find out we need to develop a clinic or a dental clinic or some sort of medical service here because you have the most people searching for health questions.
This is something I wanted to mention or to ask you. Like talking about the negative aspects, 1 week ago I came back from Eritrea. Mm-hmm. And I went to an ENT ward, which was great, and I watched Austrian doctors helping doctors in Eritrea. Like, I show you some tricks how to operate on the staples and stuff.
Yeah.
But the real problem was not that their doctors were not good enough. They were great, actually. But They have many hearing traumas, so many, many people of Eritrea are nearly deaf, and they are given new hearing aids. But people in Eritrea cannot, like, adapt them, because they need computers. So what they would need more than doctors would be computer people.
Yeah, become dependent on technology related services.
Now I realize they are really left behind.
Yeah, it's true. But I want to get back to Iris's question and see if I answer it properly. It's this change in culture to attract people to use these services. People have to have a need or a desire. And I think that's, we shouldn't feel this pressure to have to use these tools. But in some ways, in the Western cultures we live in, we're very much influenced by the economy or business. And businesses see value in using these tools because it optimizes profits or it optimizes processes, which increase profits, possibly. But
so we came up, well, you know that I was a former member of Alta Electronica, and I was with this technology. So I was really kind of fan and early adopter and always into it, and because I was questioning it in a way, but I was so fascinated. And now I'm in a changing world, in that sense that I'm connected to a lot of people who are not so familiar with it.
Yeah.
Have their borders in using it.
Yeah.
And it makes me think about how far we are already in Austria with all these usages. And
yes.
I think it makes a difference for me, as I've been to Korea and other cities and states, that a completely different use, a completely different way of of tracking data and using data. And that's interesting to me, this cultural background and seeing how we are getting.
Well, the fact that you're even holding this Kepler Salon about this topic, for me, is an indication that this is a healthy democracy that's actually questioning what's happening. But there are whole cultures, they just adopt it because...
Yeah, but Kepler Salon is not a good example. A normal audience wouldn't be around. There's a different audience today, and that's also a big point for me.
Yeah.
We were questioning last Monday all the data security and computer security with the Gerhard Eschelbeck, and it was also a big point for me. There's still only men questioning.
Yeah.
It was a good experience for me women in there. For me, it's a lot of information also in this real world reality.
Yeah.
Finding reality and a lot of information still provided.
Well, these tools are helping us visualize and see the world in ways we haven't seen before. So because we have this, we talk about data a lot, but imagine if you're able to see this data, statistics. Well, before I came here, I actually took a picture. There was a Linz information center, and then it had this Linz in Überblick. And then it showed Linz from a satellite view. But then, of course, statistics like how many people live here, or how much clean water is here, or how much clean air. Which, it's interesting statistics, but it's not something you think about. You don't look around, wow, there's 500 billion liters of fresh air around me. but we can do that now. Or you either read it in a book, or you can pull up, wow, there's a lot of fresh air here. It's like Star Trek. So yes, data can have positive and negative aspects. We can use the data in a positive sense, like crime in this part of Linz is very low, so maybe I want to move here with my family. Or why is crime higher in that other area? Maybe we need to focus more on education, or we need to have more after-school activities, or we need to create parks or other things. So we can actually, from a positive perspective, look at location-based services as a tool to help collect information and data, using it for a positive perspective. There's a lot of data out there. You've heard about the open data movement, haven't you? This is Tim Berners-Lee. Many people believe he's the father of what we call the World Wide Web in terms of HTML and allowing different platforms, whether it's a Windows machine, a Mac, or a Linux, whatever, to communicate. And the World Wide Web is just one of the services which run on the Internet. And he's pushing this movement that data should be open and free, and then we can use this data for unique and positive ways. But of course, there's always a negative side.
What I also love is, as you mentioned, it's shifting now to that we're searching more by my experience.
Yes.
I love that. And I don't have to go ahead because information is well, you Google it, so you have different ways of searching for information, describing your experience.
Yeah. That's a great point. There's three pictures here, and actually this will come into Martin's realm. I was on the train, I think it was last year, and this is a rabbi. He was traveling to Munich. I got this information from later, actually was talking with him. But as he was staring out the windows, trying to think what was he thinking about, and then I realized he was probably like maybe thinking about Jerusalem. And so I thought, it's a shame he has this huge window, which for me is an interface, but he could use that window as a way to connect to his culture. Because this is just before sunset, and he was actually saying his prayers just after this. So there's a lot of spaces around us which are not used to its full potential, like this wall. That wall could be used for many different ways. So when I was thinking on the train, he could use this to see where he was praying towards. And of course, then you have one of the expressions I really appreciate is that the physical world itself is becoming the platform. So we talk about the internet and networks and virtual realities, blah, blah, blah. But yet, the physical world itself is actually part of this platform as well. And then this is where, when we talk about augmented reality, taking data, virtual data, and then placing it back in the physical world, if you think about it, we're just using these phones again as sort of like a window. So we're going, originally, before the internet, we had just the physical world around us. And then we took data from the physical world, put it on networks. And now we're taking data from networks and putting it back into the physical world. And this is where we're at now. Exactly.
Actually, I don't think so. Last year I was in Rome for a holiday, and we really wanted to find a real Italian restaurant. And it was really hard because all of the restaurants in the known areas are made for tourists, and they're not really Italian restaurants in a sense of like. And then I just started to use Govola and Foursquare, and I found a really nice Greek Italian restaurant, and no tourist was there, and they were really shocked that
go away, it's not for tourists.
Yeah, because it was in the back door of an old house.
Yeah.
And there was just Italians. They didn't speak even any other languages.
Yeah.
Italian. So it was really great. And I'm a little more intense that in that way.
Yeah.
Because without that, I never would have found that. But I never would have tasted real Italian food, real Italian services, and that culture.
Yeah. But in this way, you just used information that's displayed on your handy, on your mobile phone.
Yes.
But I thought you meant to picture just be displayed on walls and windows of trains.
It could be, I understand, but these are other interfaces. But back to what you were saying, you were seeking an experience.
Yeah.
And you use these tools to help you achieve that goal. But yet you could have asked someone, you could have said, what restaurant should I go to? I want a really good liver case.
Liver case, baby.
Okay.
Then this is your own country, or yeah, you live here and you know people who are living here, but if you're going to holiday or going to a foreign country, yeah, where there are no friends, then it's not possible.
Yeah. But of course.
It's possible. It's possible, but it's not
bringing the best result. Right. Or maybe I don't speak Italian, so I need it in my language. So you've given an example why it's important to have these services. Of course, for me, I'm always wanted to ask a person first. But if I can't communicate or the person's not available, then the next best thing is, I don't know.
You really ask first person?
Yeah, of course. I'm actually a human being. I'm not just a gadget. Yeah.
So you're not a real nerd.
Is it Lanier? What's his first name? He just wrote another. Yeah, Jan. He just wrote a book. We are not a gadget, or you are not a gadget. It's a recent book of his. It's a critique that we've become so used to technology that we, like, since you identify me as Mr. Tech, Mr. Gadget, a lot of people do, but in reality, actually, I turn my phone off.
You do?
Yeah. Not all the time, but I do.
But you.
Yeah. No, I use the tools too, but I'm not.
But is it true that you cultivated your own way of dealing with technology and, like, availability?
I was in the past a fanatic. I was like, everything that's new, trying it out. And then I realized there's going to be something new every week. And you just get tired of it. So maybe I've reached a tipping point in my life where I only use what I feel is useful. Of course, I'm interested, and I will continue to use different services and learn new things. But it's not that I feel my identity or my value or who I am is connected to the tools. I'm still. This personas. Yeah. Well, that's the closest thing. One second. This. Because my battery is low, it doesn't show. This personas.media.mit.edu. If you put your name in, it's a student project. It gives you a visualization of how you're perceived on the internet. But yet, I don't know, maybe this is something your students could develop, is based on the social networks, how you're perceived. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yes. No, but like, for instance,
the famous project We Rule from Joshua.
No.
It's already 10 years old. They moved it over. They didn't do anything else than kind of analyzing the net, the web, and information officially displayed, like the advisory board of 50 American companies, and then visualized them again and said, like, on tables, and set the person there. And
yeah. Okay, I understand. Interesting.
I love the project because it's really coming with me since 10 years ago. It's from Josh on Future Farm and We Rule. And Foursquare and Code gives you something in your hand and fingertips, like you having all this information that people are meeting. Like,
yes.
five of us now looking to photograph, they could see a kind of structure mm-hmm. where we are meeting, and if we are doing that several times, they could see and follow us.
Yeah. Like our last time was TEDx in Vienna, where you gave a talk. And then they see a pattern. Martin and Mark are here. They're going to all these brainy places. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
But these gestures are good in general.
Yes.
And you can use all the standard like compass and
sure.
and whatever. But it's very cumbersome, I think. So it, also in here, for example, if I would like to find a hotel, I would have to find a series.
Yes.
It's not very
yes.
friendly. Not. And also, like, when you get a gorilla up, you know, this.
It does. From Fjord. That's true. Yes. You know what Martin is talking about? Apps such as Wikitude? There's Wikitude, Sakai Camera, Janio, Layer. I used to work with Wikitude in Salzburg. And so Wikitude's close to my heart because the founder, Philipp Breut Schneeweiß, the way he even came up with this idea of augmented reality app was he was in Vienna with his family. They were having a picnic. And they were sitting in Heldenplatz. And he was wondering what the names of the buildings were. And of course, you could get up and go ask someone. But when you're having a picnic, you're with your family, you want to relax. So he was thinking, how could you use technologies exist that you could use to, let's say, point or see information, a description of the name of a building. So, but this is what's called compass-based, compass in the sense based on the direction you're pointing with the camera, but you're looking through the camera and then you're getting information. That's what Martin's referring to. This is not a very natural thing to do. It doesn't look very... It looks stupid, actually, to walk around. And if, yeah, it still
sounds
stupid. But if you're doing this, I mean, someone could steal your phone too. Like if I'm in a major city, a huge city, and you're going around like this. First of all, people know you're not from there, probably, and they could just grab the phone. So how do you overcome this? I think this is where future is more. A lot of these tools will be embedded in glasses. So you can have goggles, or if you have already prescription glasses, and then the data stream is running here. So, and then there could be a little camera here. Yeah, and then based on how you turn your head. I mean, this is the future. This is what, right now, it's not a cost effective that everyone has these goggles. And they probably don't have the right goggles yet. There's all kinds of videos I could show you. There is a collection of links that I've made, and you can just click on there and I'll have all of these things. But there's some fascinating solutions that exist already. But I agree with you, this is not very natural. Yeah. 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 Yes. True. Yes. That's true. But yet, we use a map. Tablets. I don't have my tablet out, but a tablet is a much larger format. It's a mobile device. And you have a screen about this size. And actually, tablets, it makes a lot more sense. When you're doing this, you get a lot of information at once. And then you can capture that, and then come back down, and then navigate. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Not working right now because they changed the service, but it was really great because you use your phone to check in, like for stories using only mobile phones and browser-based application.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, Google made a really big deal about this because the iPad, or the app for the iPad, is only for discovering. So you cannot check in from your iPad, but only discover. It was really great because it highlighted the things that you were being and your first and your friends and what is maybe stupid for you and where do you want to go because it's good or because you don't want to go here because it's bad. And it was really great.
Mm.
And there right now I think that's the best if you are differentiating between devices.
Yes. And you could spend hours speaking about the tech. But what something came up to my mind just now is thinking, let's pretend we go back to Eritrea or Africa. Let's say I'm a young woman in Malawi. And in Malawi, culturally and socially, I can't just go date. I can't just meet men or women, doesn't matter. Meet people to date or to court. So technology is like the solution now. So SMS and chat is the way people are actually able to find other people and connect. And then the location-based services, I was alluding to this earlier, location-based social networks. People are using this for different reasons, whether you're in Malawi or whether you're, let's say, a young mother in mid-20s or late 30s who either was just divorced, maybe has a full-time job, doesn't really have time to go out to find a partner, but really wants to be in a relationship. So they use these tools to kind of like find the profile of people, the type of the dream person, the dream man. And then the location component makes it even more interesting because it's like, wow, he lives close to me or not far. So it's changing the way we approach even life in general. So it's not just about purchasing things, but how we interact with people.
They do already in Saudi Arabia, for example, because it's so strict. You must not meet people from the other sex, not even to talk about your own sex.
But you can check in.
Yes, they do. It's there's change starting.
Yeah.
What I was interested in is I stumbled upon an article about Google Street View, and it seems, or do you observe this too, that people's attitude seems to be changing again, away from the very strict, I'm in fear about my data, because in Germany it was possible that you object against your house being photographed. So they deleted it. And now many people, hundreds of thousands, I've read, could you please put me back on the map? Which is impossible. So does it change again?
Are you familiar with Google Street View? I think Google is just one solution. There are actually many similar services. What's happening is when you use, for instance, navigation, you're using maps to get from point A to point B. But we're going beyond, let's say, this, I call it grob, or this gross navigation, to the next 10 meters. So once I've arrived to the place, what is around that location? So Street View gave you this ability to actually see, I've arrived here, this is the Graben, and this is Rathausgasse. Then I can actually, with Street View, I can actually visualize and see the houses around you. The next step is actually going into the Kepler Salon, and then you have a 360 view of what's going on here. You see who's checked in, click on their social network, what's the last thing they wrote on Twitter, whatever. This Street View, people are afraid of privacy. I mean, people are going to see your house whether they see it on online or in person. I think it's more of a reaction because it becomes a reality now that, wow, people can see where I live. Not just within Linz, but someone in Eritrea can Google and see where I live. This is where this fear of losing power, they're afraid of the fact that you're more transparent. Or maybe I'm wrong. Is it?
When there's nothing to be deleting, it's a bit frustrated. The first argument was that, okay, the people who want to rob my house can see about the environment and can observe. Mm-hmm. But actually, for me, it's really stupid because, come on, everybody can go and walk around and see your house. It really doesn't matter if it's online or it's not, because you just have to go there, see. And if you are going there in the real world and see that where is what and what it is, you can see the people, you can see the habits, you can see everything. Yeah. On Google Maps, you just see a snapshot about the life for about 1/1000th of a second. So it really doesn't matter. And actually, I find it fascinating that all the people are concerned about security and data and about everything. But if you think about it, that all the mobile companies recording your location, all the banks record your location because you are paying with credit card or bank card or whatever. They're recording the amount of money, the time. The people, because of course they can compare the databases. So actually, we are not doing anything else right now. All the data, we just show it to our friends. I mean, if you are a Foursquare user, you don't have two friends. I don't know, 60, 70 people. You just only have to friend your actual friends. So I mean, I use Foursquare with only 30 people. But of course, I know much more.
Yes.
But I'm only interested in to share with those people and what they are doing as well. So I don't really see the point in security issues.
Yeah. This is another topic we could spend hours speaking of. I think the fact that the technology helps us to see or visualize things which we normally didn't see in the past is the issue. The fact that now people can see my house makes me aware of the fact that people can see about me. It's not that they couldn't see that before. No. So it's not against what you said, it's just that people are more aware now because the tools help us become more aware.
But actually it's interesting that some of my friends, all of my friends are not concerned about the security issues. None of them. Because who knows? Actually, it really doesn't matter if they know where I live or if they know what I'm up to, because you can know it in real time.
Yes.
So it really doesn't the security issue what bothers them. It bothers them that, okay, I have to check in, I have to go, and I have to take a habit about that.
Sorry to interrupt, but may I invite you all, us all, to move to some more private and familiar circles to keep the public out?
Keep the public out?
Yes. Just switch off the recording machine. No. Officially, let me finish the Kepler Salon. Let me thank you a lot for coming. But before we really stop, I just read out the next two... what's on the program on Monday? It's Sonne, Mond und Wandelsterne, ein Rundgang im Olymp in Kooperation mit dem Ars Electronica Center Linz um 19.30 Uhr. Das ist im Deep Space, am Deep Space Ars Electronica. Bitte Reservierungen unter center@aec.at. Und am Donnerstag, dem 1. Dezember um 12.30 Uhr eine neue Ausgabe des Mittags-Kepler-Salons. Woran arbeiten Sie gerade? Herr Wolf, Armin Wolf, wird man nicht extra vorstellen müssen. Er ist stellvertretender Chefredakteur, ich mache jetzt trotzdem das ORF, Moderator der ZIP2 und es wird eine Leberknödelsuppe geben. Liver dumpling soup, is it? Yeah. There is no such thing in the English.
No, Leberknödel.
Leberkäse-Suppe. Leberkäse-Knödel-Suppe. Danke, Marky Kramer, fürs Kommen. Danke Ihnen fürs Kommen. We are brave. Because
we can
we
continue
are here.
The conversation.
Let us continue the conversation.
I hope.
Thank you.
Thank you.